You are unique, active, determined, resilient. You are not your diagnosis, and you are not alone. This is Young Onset Parkinson's Network. We believe young onset Parkinson's disease does not define you. You define it. We are a safe place to learn, connect, and engage within a supportive community that actually gets it, because we've got it too. Welcome to Young Onset Parkinson's Network. Living well starts here.
Today we are talking with Susan Scarlett and BJ Behmann about A Hero's Journey, which is a program offered by our favorite improv teacher, Robert. And we're going to talk about what this means specifically to Parkinson's and beyond. So take it away, Susan.
Well, Michael asked me before everybody showed up about how I first ran into Robert and his programs and how they impacted me, why they impacted me. And to me, it kind of starts with the fact that background in any kind of performing anything, I was not interested. I was very insecure and very shy about that part of the world. And I had been part of a documentary, and as a filmmaker, Robert had learned about my little documentary, which I have a little show and tell. It's called Victory Swim. And it had caught his attention, and he sought me out, and we just connected. We just had a really neat, fun time getting to know each other and finding a lot of similarities in terms of values and things we really cared about, what was really important, family, love, stuff like that. And then I heard he was doing this improv stuff with Parkinson's, and I'm like, what? And explain that to me, Robert. And he's like, just come and play. Just come and have some fun with this, you know. And I said, no, I don't, it's not the improv. I can't do that. That's not me. And he said, you know, you're just going to have to come and jump in the sandbox and play with this. It's the only way you're really going to figure this out. So that's how I got started, literally. He wouldn't answer my question, which could have been a result of not having that answer.
What do you mean by improv, Susan?
Improv would be, in the vernacular that we use within Yes And Exercise, unplanned collaborative response, meaning we're all about community and building connections, and we're not about punchlines and dropping a good line on the group. We're about whatever it takes to build something together. And those can be short little scenes, very short little scenes, or they can be longer. And Robert is a brilliant teacher of improv. He's been a student of improv for more than 25 years. So it's quite second nature to him, not at all to me initially. Now, having done this now for several years, for me and BJ, you can speak for you too. You've probably not been as shy and insecure as I was most of my life, BJ. You don't strike me as that guy. For me, because Robert has such a warmth and friendly, supportive manner about him, it was easy to try the first time. And then I began to build a little bit of self-confidence and realize how much fun it could be and try a little harder, and found myself becoming a bigger, better version of myself because I was willing to take risks that I'd never been willing to take before.
Now, we just interviewed Robert recently, and he talked a lot about another program that he's doing about a hero's journey, and it's about telling your story. Are you guys involved with that as well, BJ? That would be you, I guess, the question directed towards.
Yes, actually, when I first found out about Robert, I was just answering some posts on LinkedIn, and I saw a post that he had recruiting for a study. And there's not many opportunities in Louisiana for studies. There just aren't that many going on down here. And so I always want to be part of a study. And so I just contacted him and said, you know, what's it all about? And he said, you know, he gave me a, it was like 4 days before the program was set to start. So he gave me like the bare bones description of it. And I said, okay, I'm in. And so I showed up having really no idea what was going on. It was extremely well done. And this was the second group he had done for his thesis. And he got his PhD at UNLV. And I was happy to be a part of that. But when he offered it again, I'm like, I want to go again. And so it's it varied the number of weeks. But the last time, I think it's 16 weeks or...
Yeah,
16 weeks course. And Susan, if you'll hold up that page you have on the hero's journey.
It's always right here next to me.
That's right. And so each week we cover one of those topics, and it's all about what you are before diagnosis, what happened with your diagnosis, and then facing your fears. And it's all a big journey about, okay, yeah, you have Parkinson's now. What are you going to do with it? You know, are you going to let it rule your life, or are you going to return with the elixir, which is the last phase where, yeah, I'm dealing with it, but I want to help other people deal with it as well. So it was a journey of discovery, and I've dealt with a lot of things in my life, and I really thought that I'd already dealt with everything I had to deal with Parkinson's. I had already been in advocacy for about 8 years at the time. And I really felt like I didn't have anything else to deal with. What I was afraid to admit to people was how bad Parkinson's can be. I was trying to be the cheerleader and say, yeah, it's not that bad. You know, look, we can thrive and everything. But I didn't show anybody my bad days and when I couldn't get out of bed. And so that was a part of me where I had to learn to allow myself to share the dark side as well as the, you know, the fun side and the growing with advocacy and everything. Even someone who's gregarious and outgoing and everything else, not afraid to do improv, I still learn quite a bit. And the biggest thing I learned was how to listen to others and let them have their say and then collaborate on that basis instead of trying to take the lead all the time.
So what you said, BJ, about you kind of thought you'd done everything, you put it out there, you've been in advocacy for a long time, and yet there was this subterranean truth that you knew you were not touching. Robert creates this safe space for his students to explore that. And the format in which that's done is we have a one-page writing assignment every week, which we submit to a shared document, and then other members of the class will read what we wrote and make comments, and Robert will make comments all the way through. So you get a real sense of where you are relative to other people who have Parkinson's, and feedback and support, and get to the place. And you were saying, Michael, before we started, that you found out things about yourself. Michael's in the class right now. And BJ and I are mentoring the class right now too. So I did Robert's first day one program, which was 27 weeks, part of his clinical trial. Then I did it again. Now I'm doing it as a mentor.
So you guys did a great job explaining what it's all about, but I want to hear your stories.
And I will interject here just before they get started, because my question has to do with what we were just speaking about. So I don't want to drag this podcast backwards. I just want to say the hero's journey is just like any other thing. For example, somebody leaves their comfort zone, right? They go on sort of like a trip or an initiation. It changes them, and they bring it back to the rest of the tribe or people or humanity. So how is this any different than, like, say, Siddhartha? Or, I mean, as Joseph Campbell says it, I understand it, but tell us how this related to you personally, just what Mike said, and sort of tagging onto that. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to say that he uses different examples. And the first one I went through, he used, you know, Luke Skywalker in Star Wars and the journey he went from being on this boring planet. And then he lost his aunt and uncle. He had already lost his parents. So then he lost his aunt and uncle. And it's all about his journey becoming a Jedi and everything like that. And so we hear these stories all the time. It's a formula that's used. And right now, Shawshank Redemption is an example that's being used, and it's wonderful. And it's really about something happens to you that is totally out of your control. Like Andy, he was falsely accused of murder, and then he was put in jail.
Explain who Andy is for the audience.
Andy Dufresne, he's the lead character in Shawshank Redemption. He was falsely accused of killing his wife, and he was put in jail. And it's all about his journey of dealing with, you know, being falsely imprisoned for something he didn't do. And the whole journey of his life in the prison, creating a world for himself, and then ultimately escaping. So that's the gist of what we're doing here. We're escaping the Parkinson's prison. And so I think a lot of people shackle themselves with the bonds that Parkinson's puts on them. But instead of being a Parkinson's patient, you can be a person who has Parkinson's, but it's not your whole life. So it's all about embracing what you still have and you can still do, breaking away from all the things that are chaining you down.
So BJ, back up a little bit and tell us about your journey. Be the hero for a minute and explain to us what has BJ been through?
So there was a lot of trauma in my childhood. So I really felt like I had dealt with a lot of things. My father had committed suicide. My mom was an alcoholic. She went through treatment twice. She married a recovering alcoholic, and he died in a hospital under horrible conditions. And so my brother OD'd when he was young, and my other brother was arrested for grand theft. And so I was the youngest of everybody, and I was witnessing all this. And so I felt like, you know, I could deal with anything, having dealt with all these things. I've always been a hard worker ever since I could push a lawnmower. You know, I always earned my own money. And so at the time of diagnosis, I was working in a chemical plant, 12-hour shifts, always worked the overtime that was available. So I tell people I really didn't have a life at that time. I was either working or recovering from work, but I was making a paycheck. You know, I was making money. I was 44 years old. And I had had an adverse reaction to medication. And that lasted about 3 weeks. It took me 3 weeks to recover from that. And after that, my stamina never returned. I was fatigued all the time. I felt like I was walking through molasses. I couldn't do anything for more than 20 minutes. And so I kind of knew something was going on other than recovering from this adverse reaction. So from that point, you know, because I made all that money, I was also spending all that money. So I was very motivated to get back to work. So I wouldn't take no for an answer. And over the next 10 months, I went to 100 doctor visits with 13 different specialists.
Wow.
And did every test known to man. About halfway through, I noticed a central tremor. And I said, oh, well, it must be something neurological. And I said, you know, that at that point, I'm like, well, I probably won't be able to go back to work if they can't treat it. And so that was really my first realization that this was a lifelong thing that was going on. And it still took another 4 months to get in to see a neurologist. And we did a DAT scan. He said, we're going to do the DAT scan to rule out Parkinson's while we figure out what else to look at. Yeah, it came back positive, which is fortunate in a way because I knew almost immediately I was diagnosed very early. I wasn't showing a lot of the signs of Parkinsonism. I was just showing the fatigue and all that other stuff, which could have so many different causes. Even though I've been diagnosed 10 years now, I don't really look like I have Parkinson's. And I think it's a lot because I was probably diagnosed 5 years earlier than most people are diagnosed.
So BJ, I want to back you up a little bit.
Okay.
You've had a story full of pain, my friend.
Oh,
Your heart has to be one of the wisest I've probably ever encountered, just judging by the things you've been through. So going back to this hero's journey, how have you been able to come to terms with some of these things, like you were saying, through this process with Robert's course?
It was a lot about, like I said, I was also in the military and the Navy. You learn to compartmentalize things as well. when you're out at sea, you try not to think of home so much, so it's not so miserable. And so you put things in little boxes. And so what I've learned to do over my life, each one of those incidents, I kind of dealt with it as best I could. And then I feel like I'm done with it and I put it on a shelf and then move on. It's something that happened. It was out of my control. And one thing I should say is, you know, when my mom went through AA, I was too young to leave at home. So I listened to all these things. I was at the AA meetings with her. And so from a very young age, I was hearing all these coping mechanisms and things that alcoholics have to go through to become recovering alcoholics. And so I was exposed to a lot of things at a very young age that I didn't even realize later that I was implementing to deal with all these things. And so when I entered the program, one of the things that people deal with when they deal with a lot of tragedy like that, they become, you know, the comedian or whatever, you know, let's make laughter of everything. And that way you don't have to deal with it. And so I was that kind of person and I was a social butterfly. I went from group to group, but never really a permanent part of each one. So there wasn't really a commitment to either group, but everyone kind of knew me and I interacted with everybody. And so I had that freedom of being whatever I wanted when I wanted. And so, but it never really held me down to anything. And so when I entered the program, I kind of learned, okay, maybe I need to nail some of these down and actually deal with both sides of the equation. Not that the distant part where this happened to someone else, it didn't happen to me. So now, okay, well, how did it affect me personally? And how did I become who I was? And thinking through that process. So I had never really done any kind of creative writing other than assignments in English. So this was all new to me as well, getting these weekly assignments and having to work through these issues. So it was very enlightening.
That is very brave of you to do that. You must have had a glimmer that it was time.
Yeah. Sounds like there's no place to hide.
Oh, no, I'm too big to hide anyway. So, you know.
You're so cute.
I'm always out there. So I don't want to hide anyways. That's my big thing about Parkinson's. I'm afraid of people who isolate themselves and what they're missing. A lot of people can't do the exercises. Everyone pushes exercise. But there's a lot of people who can't really do that or leave the house or they don't, you know, they're doing this solo. And so I want to find a way through creative interactions, and Robert has shown me one that is perfect, that can engage people no matter where they are, as long as they can get on Zoom and break them out of this isolation and help them live a more fruitful life.
And BJ, just for clarity, are you talking about the Jam for Joy, the improv part of what Robert does, or the day one program, which is the writing program?
Yes, and both.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Jam for Joy is really for anybody, and it can be for healthcare professionals. It can be for care partners. It can be for anyone that has any sort of association with Parkinson's. And eventually, I really feel that Robert is going to move on to with veterans who have PTSD and things like that. It's going to go beyond Parkinson's. But for right now, this is the audience he has worked with because of his father. I just really feel like it is an easy way for someone to break out of isolation.
What specific challenges of Parkinson's has improv in general helped you each with? Susan, I'll ask you first.
As a lifestyle, as a descriptor of who I've been in my whole life, I have been in service to others. I've done a heck of a good job of that and not such a good job of noticing what effect that might have on me. And Parkinson's is pretty relentless in that. It doesn't give you a pass just because you have a big heart and you are willing to devote time and energy to someone else. It's still going to take its toll on you. We're about love and care and respect. I mean, those are really unusual words to use in a description of a program, but this is exceptional stuff, I think. So I have become more aware of my own needs and specifically able to be upfront about them and verbal and vocal and self-advocate, because I got to practice stuff like that, playing improv games, as cornball and as silly as that sounds. Practicing being uncomfortable has allowed me to be uncomfortable and say no. I mean, like my beloved husband, who Heather knows, and BJ knows, he's like head shaking at the difference in what a grown up I've become and how much I'm willing to draw lines, set boundaries and things like that. And that's strictly courage and something that was enhanced in me by the belief that Robert and the whole troupe would offer me whenever we were on screen together.
So courage and confidence, but more to the point, anything specific to Parkinson's, like for example, it helped my facial masking, or it helped my tremors, or it helped my vocal strength, or anything like that, BJ?
Definitely vocal strength. They're kind of more meshed than I was being very articulate about. I was always really shy to sing. So you could say I was shy about singing. But when you had Parkinson's, it's harder to get your voice to get out there anyway. So the work that we did when Robert brought in a speech pathologist to teach us to speak with intent and to project, that actually taught me that when I sing in the car by myself, I can belt it out and it comes out better. Is that the
what
kind
are you of singing in the car?
Just about anything.
give us a little example.
You know, you can't possibly ask me to do
it's
that.
Sir Mix-a-Lot. It's definitely Sir Mix-a-Lot.
I will tell you this. I don't know if I can pull this off. My mom is 99 years old, and my mom has had the sweetest, dearest voicemail message for years. And when she moved into skilled nursing unit, she had to get a different phone system, and her little wonderful voicemail message was going to go away. And I just couldn't bear that. And I thought, I have to adapt my mom's voicemail message somehow to me. And so I'm going to try, and I'm going to try to sing it for you because you asked me to. Mom's name is Jean, and her, so she would say, "What a day this has been, what a rare mood I'm in. Leave your name and your number for Jean." Mine's just one or two words different. "What a day this has been, what a rare mood I'm in. Leave your name and your number for me." I giggle on my voicemail and I get lots of feedback how much people enjoy it. So is that the kind of thing you were asking?
Yeah, whatever it is that you're singing now, whatever, however you decide. That's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Slice of apple pie and some vanilla ice cream on top.
Oh, yeah. You're so cute.
It's so pure all-American stuff right there. I love it.
I'm a Midwestern girl.
What about you, Jay? What has it helped enhance, or what has it helped you with your symptoms?
With symptoms, I see it more as a preemptive thing for me, because when I found out that Parkinson's people start losing their voices, or it becomes softer or whatever, before I met Robert and all this, I actually became a tour guide for 2 years. So I would use and project my voice. So I like to do things that are fun, but still, you know, instructional and helpful. And so I'm trying to put off those days where I have a soft voice or whatever. And so I take this as kind of like a daily supplement, and kind of put off a lot of those things that I see other people dealing with. It does, I will say that it really does give you a dose of dopamine, because it doesn't matter how I feel, what my mood is, if I'm stuck in apathy, if I show up to one of these sessions, I leave feeling like, okay, I'm ready to interact. I'm ready to do things. I'm ready. You know, it gives me that burst of energy that it seems like nothing, no medication, no supplement, no vitamin B drink. It doesn't do anything near what these sessions do.
DJ, I think you hit it right on the head with what I was going to say was a good answer for Heather's question on a specific symptom that this addresses: apathy. Mm-hmm. This addresses apathy head on. Absolutely. Yes. The social aspect of just coming together and being goofy with each other. That's kind of what we do in this podcast. So this would be our little social support network here. But how important is that to you, Susan? And as a mentor now, have you seen a lot of other people who have benefited? And tell me a story about one of your mentees that really benefited from this program.
Oh my gosh. Well, one of them lives in Italy, and she values this so much that she stays up until 1 and 2 in the morning to be able to come to class. And that turns out to be the best time for her to, for us to interact. So we'll spend 1.5 hours on the phone, literally going over a paragraph that she wrote that she wants to submit just to make sure the words are right. I was a lit major in college, so I love language, I love words, and so it's personally just a lot of fun for me. I never had the self-image or self-confidence that I could be a teacher, and so I didn't pursue teaching. There aren't that many things that English majors would typically do. You know, maybe journalism or teaching, and I didn't do either of those. Now I'm finding myself in a leadership role and teaching and standing in front of groups and traveling and speaking and stuff like that. That's more about me than about my mentees.
Well, I formed a question on what you were saying, and I want to stop you there.
Okay.
Because on day one, you know, going back to Robert, the name of Robert's class, on day one of your Parkinson's diagnosis, would you have ever guessed that you'd be in this role?
100% no. I really kind of shake my head at the truth of it for now. There's just so much love and respect. It just fills you up. So no, I definitely wouldn't. And BJ was referencing the superheroes was the first journey around Joseph Campbell's structure. And a lot of us had trouble with seeing ourselves as a superhero. This is just crazy, but I woke up one morning with this fully formed, really fun idea that turned into an infomercial. And it's 7 minutes long, and it's on YouTube, and it's called Susan's Magic Words. And it's, you know, it's me. It was so clear. I dreamed it, and I wrote it down as soon as I woke up, and I told Robert, and he said, you got to do this. But basically, it was me standing up saying, I'm Susan Scarlett, and I'm here to sell you 2 words, yes, and. And I developed this whole thing about yes, and. It goes on and on. And the program, the first time I did it, which was literally part of Robert's clinical trials, he wanted us to come up with some kind of final presentation. And I'll show you what mine was, because it's right here. Now, remember, this is the superheroes class. I made myself a cape, a yes and cape, and I named myself the notorious FOG. FOG stood for Fighter Overcomes Gibberish, because I was scared silly of gibberish. I still don't like it. But I mean, you know, I never thought I would have been making myself a cape either. The second time I did it, however, was much more serious and very different.
Wait, what do you mean by gibberish?
Oh, you're so tricky.
And then, you know.
BJ, are you any good at gibberish?
What's that?
Are you any good at gibberish? It's nonsense. It doesn't make...
Gibbledygook.
What'd you call
it? It's...
I guess I start getting shy very quickly.
Hey, just find one of those born again Christians that say they speak in tongues. Just kidding. Just kidding.
You didn't really say that.
Born again comes handy.
Susan, you remember what mine was?
Your gibberish?
My superhero.
Oh,
we do.
I am Sir Mountain. Oh. Yeah, because I help up. I help others surmount their difficulties.
Surmount the difficulties. That was so good.
So even from that point, wanting to become a mentor, I had totally bought into what Robert's doing. And even with my superhero, I wanted to portray that yes, I'm willing to help others no matter what. As far as seeing others, I've seen people that are wallflowers not interacting at all. And they start to speak with the soft voice and everything. And then before you know it, they're like, and let me tell you another thing. It's like you see them become totally mute and silent and separate to a fully engaged member, engaging. And it helps them people who have lost their voice or become shy in conversation, it helps them be more confident and be able to express themselves and to perhaps talk to a care partner about what's going on and not sit back and just take everything that happens.
And the part of you that came awakened from this too got sort of bigger and stronger, or more clear at least. What is it that you like to sing in the car or wherever? What's one of your go-tos?
Well, I can sing a lot of different stuff, but one of my favorites is The River by Garth Brooks.
Excellent. How's
that going? A dream is like a river, ever changing as it flows. Yeah. And we are just a vessel that must follow where it goes. Trying to learn from what's behind you, and never knowing what's in store. Make each day a constant battle just to stay between the shore. There you go.
Thank you. That is wonderful.
These battles.
Heather, put your bra back on.
many battles you've been in. Thank you for your service, by the way. And can you talk a little bit more about how you've transformed pain in your life into singing and into these other things? You've done a lot of work.
Who are you talking to?
Well, you.
Okay. I wanted to make sure because I saw Nathan nodding, so I didn't
know. No, it's not me. You're surmounting, not me.
All right. So, like I said, I used things like that. I can't draw a straight line. I can't paint. I can't do anything really constructive with my hands, but I can mesh people. I can take this person and find the common avenue and say, hey, let's get together. You know, so I build relationships, I hope, hopefully. And then what I like to do is I like to find out the thing that'll lift all that weight on somebody and just throw it away for a few minutes, you know? So, you know, if I'm talking to somebody or whatever, and they mention something, and one of my most favorite icebreakers is, it doesn't matter if I'm talking to someone who's 10 years old or 80 years old, I say, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because automatically it removes them from where they are right now, brings them back to their childhood, and it just, all the weight of what adult is, it's like gone for just a few brief seconds, and you can see them reminisce.
I feel like when you were on the ship at sea, you were probably the one who was keeping the chaplain sane.
Well, it's funny you mention it, because I would have people at the time in the 80s, you know, and early 90s, we didn't have the internet, we didn't have iPods, we didn't have CD players on the boat. People would come down to my watch station and I would sing to them.
Aww.
And then there was one time someone was trying to remember all the words to American Pie by Don McLean. And of course I knew them all. And so they come down here with a notebook and they're trying to, you know, write down all the words. And it was something to pass the time for me. And I helped other people, you know, put up with all the horrible things being at sea away from everybody.
Music has been a salve throughout history. And has Kelly noticed a difference in you, Kelly, your wife?
In the sense that,
hold on, it's gotta be yes and
yes and it's true. It is a yes and what has happened to me over the past 2 years being involved in this program is that I don't try to take the lead every time. I actually listen and tune in. And whereas before I was kind of a social butterfly, never, you know, building relationships but not delving into relationships. You know, at a certain point you're like, okay, that's, you know, we have a good friendship, that's enough. But now I want to create those bonds, and I'm not afraid to anymore. And it's so
the
I'll
best, actually best advertisement ever. There's gonna be wives everywhere, like running to their phones to call and sign their husbands up right now.
Get them into improv,
right? But you know, if you're in this session and you have, you know, 16 different people being completely open, eventually, you learn how many differences there are, and you see people not through your eyes, but through the whole group's eyes. And so if you look through your eyes, you're only going to see a few certain parts of someone's personality that attracts you. But now I see things that normally I wouldn't care about. It's like, oh, that's really cool. And so I'm noticing things that I'm more interested, more engaged. And I really, you know, if you want to say it, I really care about what's happening. And every conversation, I've got a new expression now that I say, you know, everyone you meet is a child of God. Why waste the opportunity? And so every person you meet, why waste that chance to connect? Because you never know what gift they're going to give you or you're going to give them that'll totally transform the situation.
Some people hide it really well. But yes.
Yeah.
So, BJ, you mentioned something I wanted to talk about, which is 16 different people. And I think that that's an important part that people should understand when they're thinking about this, because a lot of people are turned off the idea of doing online or virtual training of any kind. But you're talking about 16 different people. You're talking about 16 people from around the country, around the globe. Where are these 16 different people from, and how different are they? And how cool is this?
Well, what's really funny is I'll give an example today. We had a breakout room in the Jam for Joy, and me and Kelly from Texas were putting a room together, and we were saying everything with a twang. And I was like, this is like the first time that I've been coupled with someone who sounds exactly like me. And so for 2 years, every time we go into a breakout room, every time there's an exercise, each person gets a spotlight for 10 seconds, and you learn something new every single time. And by the time you've gone around that room 6 times in an hour, you really feel that connection with all these different people from Hawaii to England to, you know, wherever in the world. If they have Zoom, they can be there. And it's not necessarily learning all the details about where they live, what they do, and all this other stuff. It's more about who they are, period, and how they express themselves. And so I really find that intriguing, because there hasn't been any other form of instruction or class or anything else where that has been a result. Even in school, everyone got up and read their paper, and you're like, okay, yeah, so what? But with the interaction portion, it's like now you're connected to this other person. You've interacted with them, and you do that over the course of 2 years. You know, this person I had nothing in common with, it doesn't matter anymore. I love every aspect about them.
Yeah.
And so that it's just something that can't be recreated in anything I've ever been through.
Totally agree.
And
and very well said.
Susan, you're not going to get away from this. I would love to hear more about some things that you've struggled with, and things that cause you pain, and some of the obstacles that you've overcome, very on a very personal level, as personal as you'd like to get.
Sure.
I know a few things about your history, and I think you're incredibly strong. So I'd like you to talk more about that, please.
I would say I was the inverse or the opposite kind of life from BJ's life as a girl compared to his life as a young boy. Happy family, one brother, family all lived together in the same town, and we got together at my grandmother's every week and had dinner together every Saturday night, and we had a family business, and it was just so the observation of the pain came through the hero's journey, and I didn't really understand what it was as I went through the journey and was traveling, if you will, with the people in my family. As I was writing each of these sections, I began to see what roles they had in my life, and who was trouble and where I had more challenge dealing with people who love me. And I know, you know, it was a positive environment, and yet there was subtext that had effects on me. The biggest insight about myself at the second hero's journey that was based on the Shawshank Redemption that came together for me was a recognition that what I thought was helpful was just the opposite. I would have my dad or my brother do things for me because they would see that I was struggling, and they would just take over and do it. And even my husband will do that sometimes, out of kindness, out of love. Well, guess what that resulted in? Lack of self-confidence, lack of willingness to take the risk, feeling like it was scooped away from me without having a conscious awareness of that as a child. But as an adult, it carried on. And so this work has put me right in a breakout room or in a Zoom screen with a moment when something's supposed to come out of my mouth, and it does, and nobody else is doing it for me. And it's so empowering to realize that I have a voice. I actually get to define what my boundaries are in my life, and nobody else does. So it's not a pain kind of thing, like specifically like BJ, with one exception. BJ lost his father to suicide. You were young, right? Were you a young man?
5 years old.
You were 5 years old. So that was lots of different things, mystery to you in many ways. I lost my father to suicide 20 years ago. So I was an adult. My family had always talked about suicide as a right we should all have, you know, kind of theoretic, it's our life. And I actually grew up with that conversation fairly normal in my household, with an understanding that they were not kidding. We all were serious about it, but I didn't dive very deeply into it until my grandmother, my father's mother, took a pair of scissors and tried to plunge them into her heart. But she was 80 years old and she was too weak, and she did not succeed that time. She left a note by her bed, and she just said, I don't want to live like this anymore. So she quit eating. It took a while. 20 years later, my dad had a medical diagnosis that was pretty dire and a bunch of personal problems. And he decided to check himself out, took a whole bunch of pills, and he woke up the next morning. And nobody knew he had a gun, and he killed himself. And the hero's journey work around that led me finally, among many, many, many emotions I had about that, a lot of support. I felt like my dad always had the right to do that, but I never imagined there would be violence. I just thought it would be pills or something easy. It was a naive approach that I had. And I realized in my hero's journey writing that I was angry. I mean, I had lots of other emotions that are more like what you might imagine, but I could not give myself permission to feel anger at the consequence of Dad's choice until I wrote all this stuff down.
It's almost like the hero's journey is become like a metaphor and helped you to really absorb what has happened to you and put all the places where they need to be for you to move on, right?
Yes.
BJ, would you agree with that?
Yeah, one of the most powerful things I found about the program is that we're all dealing with things that seem like intangibles that are roiling around inside of us. And, you know, it's a feeling, but you can't really describe the feeling, and or it's something that happened. But using metaphors, you can take this intangible and give it width, breadth, mass, and it's something you can face and say, okay, if I was facing this tornado, what, you know, how would I deal with it? Whereas if you're saying, what do I do with this disappointment? You know, well, you know, it's not really something you can grab and throw across the room or throw in the trash can. But all throughout this, these writing assignments, it's all about taking these things that you don't know how to define, give it shape, substance, and then you can take it out. You know, you can just start pummeling it and dealing with it and everything else. And so, you know, a lot of artists, that's what they do. They take intangibles, make them tangible where people can feel it in their works. But for someone like me who've never really delved into art and creative things before, it's been powerful. And so, and of course, the studies, I need to bring up, studies show that people after diagnosis of Parkinson's, it's not necessarily that they become more artistic. They've always had the art inside of them, but the inhibitions to sharing it disappear. And the inhibitions to expressing themselves start to disappear. And unless they're in a program like this, they're not aware of that. And so it's very therapeutic and healing to just start to release those things. And that's why I think exercise is great, but I like the exercise with dance because you're telling a story and you're expressing and things like that. So try to combine it to where you're also making neural pathways and all that. Any way you can combine the two, exercise and storytelling, I think is the most therapeutic way. And then take the metaphors, give substance to what you're dealing with, and then just pummel it. That's
pummel it.
So you keep mentioning a word, and I think this will probably be my last question. You're mentioning the word expression, and I think that that's a very important word for a large swath of our community because they've lost the ability to express themselves. And they're probably sitting there listening to this whole conversation as it's winding down thinking, I can't do this. So my question's not for either of you. It's actually for Mike. With two mentors from this program, Mike, what do you have to say to whoever's sitting out there who's struggling similarly to you, an awesome dude who's sitting here on a podcast and can hardly even talk sometimes? And you're doing a course about expressing yourself and exercising in expressing yourself. How important is it for you to stop yourself from saying, I can't do this, and saying, yes, I can do this, and I'm going to?
What this call has done for me is it's forced me to face myself, my thoughts, what I've done, and how I grew up, my family, they went through what I went through. I wouldn't have faced without this course. The reason I take this course so I can continue to express myself. My writing skills are much better now because I've learned that in the course. It forced me to face myself, as I mentioned. And the people in the class are very nice. They're good people. Somebody from Italy said, I think you mentioned, Susan, that you get up 2 o'clock in the morning every day just to come to the class. The people there are wonderful. Safe places, BJ mentioned.
So I'm thinking back on episodes. And, you know, when I first started, Mike, you were struggling quite a bit. But then there came a point in time when I noticed you started talking a little bit better. And I would make comments on it like, man, you sound really good today. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, I wonder how did that correlate with his timing in this session that he was taking? Did it?
My voice started to go down again because it's been 3 months last. Botox shot in my throat.
Botox. The magic stuff. So, Mike, how do you want to wrap this up? This has been an awesome conversation. What do you want to talk about now to wrap it up? We've already covered music, and that's usually how we do it.
I just want to mention both Susan and BJ. Those stories you guys told were heartwarming.
Absolutely.
And it took a lot of courage to tell those stories.
Thank you.
Well, and that's the thing. Once you've told the story to a caring, safe group of people, then you can move forward and share it with others.
Right. Thanks.
And I'd like
heard.
Yes.
Yes.
And the whole line of thinking about expression and people's shyness or lack of confidence in themselves or feeling insecure about the ability to do that. Even as a literature major, I struggled when Robert wanted us to use metaphors, and I think everyone did. And he did a good job of showing us, teaching us, giving us examples, and you never felt judged. I felt at least just taught how to come up with, you know, that thunderstorm that BJ mentioned. And in my case with my father's story, it became an opera, and all the people who were traveling with me on the journey were in this opera called the Threshold Symphony, and we were crossing the threshold, and the opera was called No One Knew He Had a Gun, and there was an aria that dad sang that was entitled I Don't Want to Live Like This Anymore, quoting his mother. And that kind of expression came out of the sense of togetherness and teaching that happened in the class.
You keep mentioning teaching. I'm finding you guys are giving me the easiest question segues ever. You're using keywords that are awesome. So teaching, that reminds me of childhood when I think of, you know, teaching. That takes me back to school days. And that's exactly what this is a class, right? But I think more importantly is this is a whole way of putting us back in the frame of mind of a child and kind of reconnecting with that side of us. Would you guys agree?
And you said that to Robert, right?
I did, but listen to you. You follow along the podcast. Good, good girl. All right. But seriously, the question posed to you guys, do you sense that as well?
I say, in a lot of ways, it does bring you back to the beginning of a trial, and you get to walk through it again with permission. It's not like you're going back and making yourself do it. He brings you to a place where you can pick and choose what do you want to deal with next. And it's all self-driven. There's no grades. Your normal boundaries of a teacher in a classroom are gone, and you learn in ways you've never learned before. So it brings you back into an almost idyllic version of a classroom like you wish it would be when you were young. It's like, I wish education was like this when I was young.
Because it's unstructured, people get afraid.
Right.
I'd like to know what's happening next. You know, the kind of person that's going to a party with you and they're like, what are you wearing? Where do we park? Who's going to be there? I don't want to know these things myself, but some people do. So for someone who's a little more insecure, they might hold back. Do yourself a favor and go. It's whimsical. It's playful. And like BJ said, like Susan said, there's no pressure. And I also want to say you two are incredibly humble, each in your own way. Susan, I know that you're incredibly wise. I know that you're extremely generous and extremely giving. And I liked what you said in the beginning of our talk, that there's not enough self-care or not enough awareness of how it's affecting you. So good for you for making this time for yourself, including these classes you're taking. And BJ, again, thanks for your service. Thanks for all that you've shared too. And sometimes when I leave one of these talks, I just sit there for a while with my mouth hanging open of what people have been through. And there's so much wisdom in this room. Thank you.
That'll do it for tonight, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the show. Tune in next time for more guests, more fun. Have a great night, everyone.
You know a dream is like a river, ever changing as it flows. And the dreamer's just a vessel that must follow where it goes. Trying to learn from what's behind you, never knowing what's in store.